Welcome to Ed Show episode 123. I'm Simon Perryman, joined again by David Tassar. And we got a lot of news to cover today, a lot of exciting announcements as we prep for TechEd Europe. I guess kicking it off, first of all, as you guys probably already know, the preview, the technical preview is now out for Windows Server as well as System Center. So we definitely encourage you to check it out. And if you go to the TechNet article, it'll actually walk you through at a higher level some of the new enhancements around Hyper-V, clustering, network, and storage. So a lot of great new capabilities here. On the Eval Center, you can go and download the technical preview. And you can also download the System Center technical preview. So if you want to start getting hands-on using these great technologies.
I also have to give a shout out for those of you who happen to have Microsoft Azure. If you want to get up and running very quickly with an Azure virtual machine, you can go to the gallery and the server preview is up there as well.
Now, David, tell me about some of the upcoming jump starts we have.
Yeah, sure. The first one I think you have in the list here is dev test scenarios in the DevOps world. Now, what I will say is this is going to be oriented more towards developers, but there are some nuggets of learning that an operations person could have. For instance, application insights, I'd say, is very relevant for an operational audience. And if you're really just curious on some of the things that the developers may be going through, that's one to check out. What else do we got here? We also have modernizing your data center jumpstart. This one is good if you are still stuck on, let's say, Server 2003, and you're not really familiar with all of the new things that are out in 2012 R2 and beyond and System Center. So this will give you a good feel for kind of what are some of the things to think about and when you're migrating your workloads. There is, I will say, a separate jumpstart for specifically migrating. So this is not going to give you the nitty-gritty details of how to migrate off of Server 2003, but it'll just give you kind of a, you know, a good idea of you know, the current state of the industry with those products.
And a lot of the business justification to help you convince your boss to make this decision, why we need to go. Not to mention the fact you should do it because you don't want to be running on a non-supported, non-compliant operating system.
Yeah. You don't want to have any bugs hit your system.
Excluding that one, we'll give you lots of other great reasons to move to the latest and greatest.
That's right.
And then our third jump start is around PowerShell, right?
The next one in the list that we have is this PowerShell jumpstart for Active Directory. So if you are doing any kind of automated things with Active Directory, you know, this is a great one to understand all of the ins and outs with the experts that are in that space for PowerShell and Active Directory.
Great. Well, next thing we want to announce is a update to the Microsoft Virtual Machine Converter, also known as the MVMC. Now, this tool has been around for a couple releases now. We're in the third one. And it allows you to migrate VMware virtual machines to either Hyper-V or to Windows Azure. So it does the full end-to-end process of converting taking the VM offline, converting the VMDK file to a VHD file, and then even giving you the ability to go and push it up into Azure. What's new in the 3.0 release is we've now included capabilities to allow you to do a P2V migration, or a physical to virtual. And so this means that you can take an existing Windows client laptop, a physical Windows server, or even a Linux server and go and convert it into a Hyper-V virtual machine. Now, this feature, the P2V conversion, was actually removed from the latest release of System Center Virtual Machine Manager. So this is a feature that a lot of people have been requesting. So we're now providing this back to the community, and we're making it a free standalone tool. So check the link at the bottom if you want this free Microsoft conversion tool. What's happening in the Docker world?
Oh, big news there. So previously to this, right, we had a way for you to provision a Docker virtual machine Linux image inside of Azure. And if you've watched the previous Ed Show episode, you will have seen that. Now, the news as of now is a number of things. One is that we have a Windows containerization story for Docker. So basically, you can have a Windows underlying Windows operating system with the next version of server, and we are going to natively support Docker containers. That's a pretty big deal. So now, if you want to run Docker on an underlying Windows server host, you can do that. The other big thing to point out is that we're working with Docker directly. So instead of having to use our own command line tools to, let's say, provision a VM in Docker, you could actually natively use the Docker command line tools to provision a containerization story inside of Azure, for instance. So that's kind of a good story there. But I mean, just continues to show our committed investment to various open source technologies that are out there in the industry, and supporting them as well, of course, on our Microsoft Azure Cloud platform.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Final announcement is from one of our partners. One of the new features that we're trying to add to the Edge Show is providing you some information about partner solutions to help fill some gaps that Microsoft hasn't filled themselves. So this announcement comes from one of our ISV partners, GridPro, based out of Sweden. What they've done is they have built an extension that allows you to connect System Center Service Manager to the service management automation features of Windows Azure Pack. So what this does is, through Service Manager, you can now go and create connections to those individual PowerShell workflow-based runbooks that only exist in Windows Azure Pack. So this means, for example, you could get a new incoming self-service request from an end user through a different portal or through the Windows Azure Pack portal, process that request within Service Manager, and then go and trigger an automated workflow to go and execute any type of task you want. And again, this capability is not provided in Box. So this is a really nice enhancement provided by our partner, GridPro. And we'll include a link to their sales information page and product information page at the bottom of this as well.
Okay. Well, last but not least, we wanted to let you know a couple other things. One is that next week we will not be having an Edge show. We have a lot going on here. Our team is very, very busy.
So sad.
I know. A number of us are traveling. We're preparing for Tech Ed Barcelona, and that is the next thing. So, you know, definitely make sure there's a no news episode next week. We do have the Azure Conf, so you can, that's a live stream. You can tune into that on Channel 9. But the following week, so the last week of October, we will be streaming live, a bunch of us doing interviews, talking about new announcements, things like that that are happening at TechEd Europe. So you definitely want to tune into the Channel 9 live stream there. You can ask us questions on Twitter, and we'll do a recorded Edge show for that week, which will go up later. But so definitely stay tuned to the Edge show. If you have questions in the meantime, feel free to hit us up.
All right, and now let's go over to our technical interview where we'll be taking a look at desired state configuration. Welcome back to the Edge Show. I'm Simon Perryman, and in this interview segment, we're going to be taking a look at desired state configuration, one of the enhancements in PowerShell that allows you to ensure that your servers and other resources are configured correctly. First, my guests, they join us from the Windows Server Engineering team, part of the PowerShell Engineering team. I'm going to give them a chance to introduce themselves, and then we'll get talking about DSC. Kenneth. Who are you and what do you work on?
My name is Kenneth Hansen. I'm working on Windows PowerShell. I've been working on PowerShell for the last 12-something years. I've been at Microsoft for about 19 now.
Nice.
So it's been a while.
Hemant?
My name is Hemant Mahawar. I'm a program manager in Windows PowerShell. And for the last 8 years, all my Microsoft life, I've been doing PowerShell, starting from version 1 all the way to version 5 now.
Nice. So we got PowerShell gurus here in the room. My first question, though, is I guess just kind of a high-level question about compliance. Why is compliance important in data centers? You know, I often hear people have different compliance requirements, whether it's the industry they're in, whether it's some type of government regulation, or even just within their own company. But why is it so important?
Well, I would say basically because you got to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get it right for many different reasons, as you've pointed out. You have to get it right either because the government requires you to due to some legislative capabilities, or because your corporation has some standards that you have to comply with, or frequently just because you got to get the systems working, right? So if they're not out of compliance, then they're just not working correctly. And so,
and I think, you know, another important thing is avoiding those penalties that you can get as well, right? You know, loss of business, loss of certification, different fees, different fines, depending
exactly.
on the different industry. So right. I think there's kind of, you know, business incentive as well as oftentimes monetary incentive to ensure you have that.
And if your systems are down and not working, that's not bringing in money.
Even
so
worse,
you're not
right?
getting paid.
No one's happy there.
No one's happy, so...
Well, now, another key part of DSC here as well is the automation side. In general, why is automation so important in the data center?
So there are two things. Basically, if you look at, if I want to summarize, it's about velocity and simplicity.
Okay.
And if you look in today's world how and the direction we are going to start things in cloud at a larger scale. And systems are getting more complex. Mm-hmm. And you want to manage them in a simple way. You don't want those complexities to come in when you're managing them. And the other piece is, if you look at how the DevOps model is rolling out, people are making check-ins on a regular basis, more than once in a single day. And when you see how this spans the scale of servers and machines you have, then you want to make sure those changes go faster without breaking anything. Because if one system breaks, then everything is going to break down.
So what exactly is desired state configuration? Is this a feature? Is it a technology? Is it a methodology?
It's all of those.
All of the above.
It's
okay.
All of the above. As a PowerShell desired state configuration, just a part of PowerShell, we added to the language. But the notion of desired state or declarative programming has been around for a long time. So even if you take a look at something like Prolog, right, has been around for forever. We don't use it much these days. But it had a very declarative nature. You know, some real challenges with that. So imperative programming, that is to say, when you tell computers how to do things, have sort of, you know, won out, because mm-hmm. that's the way we think. However, desired state configuration has really come into its own as a declarative form, and we're starting to talk about how do I say I want this machine or this system to look like this, right? To look in a specific way. Because we now focus the declaration on a specific subtask, if you will, right? A specific type of computing, it becomes much more viable. And so now you're able to say, hey, I want this computer to have a Windows server on it. I want it to have a web server on it. And I want it to have the following website on it. And I want it to have the following firewall rules. And then you just walk away, and desired state configuration just makes it so. So desired state configuration at its foundational concept is you want to say how you want the world to be and let something else do all the grunt work to make it really happen.
Okay.
And just to summarize, it's essentially yes. a very declarative way to say what state you want your system or set of machines to be in.
Now, within PowerShell, what exactly is its relationship? Is this a specific PowerShell module? Is it built into PowerShell? How do I get it? How do I leverage it?
So as Kenneth mentioned, desired state configuration is a feature of PowerShell. It was introduced with PowerShell version 4. So essentially means wherever you have PowerShell version 4, you have desired state configuration installed with it. It doesn't come as a separate component. It's part of PowerShell. So you can get in box with Windows Server 2012 R2 or Windows 8.1, or you can install the Windows Management Framework. That is our shipping vehicle for taking the PowerShell latest functionality for down-level OSs.
On top of it, recently, we've actually started to produce the Windows Management Framework, WMF, in a preview capacity. So stuff we're developing today, tomorrow, we'll actually release in a preview capacity in, you know, a month or two or reasonably frequently. We just released one in September, which had some of the latest bits in it. So you actually have sort of three ways, if you will, to get it PowerShell and PowerShell desired state configuration, either in the core OS that we ship on, either down level, which has that version at, you know, N or N-2 version of the operating system, or by using our latest, which is also just a download.
So what is the exact scope that DCS can manage? Can I manage servers, client machines, older versions, Linux machines? Like, what's kind of the breadth of this?
That's a great question. We want to manage
everything
that
right?
needs to be managed,
everything.
Right?
Yep.
Anything that should be managed via a declarative approach, we should be able to manage the desired state configuration. We're not all the way there yet, right? So we ship in Windows. You can manage Windows with it, for sure. We actually have put out an open source version of it on Linux, and that actually is available today. So you could actually write some various stuff, some resources. That is to say, that's what DSC actually gets a hold of, right, in Python, and you can have it manages. And what does it not manage?
And apart from it, when we released DSC version 1 in PowerShell 4.0, we shipped a bunch of resources inbox. So there were some built-in functionality that you can do, but that was V1. There were 12 of those. And over time, in last less than a year, we have increased that number from 12 to over 60.
Okay.
So we have been churning out more resources as a Microsoft from various teams, various folks, and we have been putting that out for experimental purposes for people to use it, adopt it, provide feedback, help us make it better, and then eventually ship as part of the OS.
Yeah, I'll make a simple point. So a DSC resource,
That was my next question. What is a DSC resource?
Good job.
Exactly. We should talk a little bit about DSC resource. So when you write a configuration, maybe we should... We should eventually start showing a configuration.
Yeah.
We'll show you the PowerShell. But while you're bringing that up, when you write a configuration, you're saying how you want the world to be, right?
Okay.
So I could say, hey, Kenneth's configuration and Kenneth's world configuration, Kenneth equals rich, world equals peace, car equals Ferrari, color equals red.
Nice, nice.
Right,
keep it a classic.
That's a great way to go. That's a great Kenneth world configuration. The problem is there's nothing behind it to make it actually real.
Uh-huh.
Right? I don't have what we would call a DSC resource that actually makes it so. And when we ship, what we said is, hey, we're going to enable people to write these DSC resources in PowerShell or in other languages so they can sort of plug in,
okay,
almost like you would a commandlet, and we'll go ahead and we'll call down directly desired state configuration, knows how to call into those things to actually make it real.
And I think this is a great time to show exactly how those things look like today.
Sure. I mean, at a higher level, could I kind of assume that it's some type of mapping between the information DSC needs and then being able to speak to those different discrete systems, different resources?
Yes. And essentially, yeah, that is whatever people have been learning about PowerShell and commandlets and functions, you can just leverage all those concepts, put a layer of abstraction to make things happen.
Okay.
And that's why I said it might make sense.
Yeah, let's take a quick look at a demo here.
So here you see there is a commandlet which creates SMB share. And this commandlet was introduced in Windows Server 2012 timeframe. And it's very declarative. It tells you that you want to create a share with the name and where's the path, who should have full access and read access. That's great. This is one-liner. It gets your job done. But this one-liner will work the first time. The second time you want to use the same thing, you have to do a lot of checks. And when you start doing checks, you end up writing a lot of code around it. And you will check, oh, is the SMB share with that name already exist, if they have the right permissions or not. And if you see this script that is on the screen, you will notice here you are putting what you want and how you want. Both things are coupled together. And with DSC, this is the view, which essentially uses the same script under the covers, but now you are expressing your intent. I want an SMB share, it should be present, name should be this, who should have read access, write access. At no point I'm telling how it should be done.
Okay.
And that is where the resources comes in, and they know, they take this information, user intent, and they know how to reach that state, and they make happen.
Okay, so if I can, you know, kind of step back, it seems like you're basically providing guidelines, and then under the covers, these resources apply those guidelines to ensure that it meets these requirements.
That's right. In fact, a resource basically implements three functions. And they're just PowerShell functions. They implement a test, a set, and a get. We call the test, and we say, is it in the right state?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not, we call the set, and you
put
make
it in
it
that
so.
State.
Put it in that state, and that's it. And then we go through all the way to the end. We have a way of declaring dependencies. So if I, for example, am going to have a website again, right, then I would depend upon there being a web server available, and I can simply say depends on equals and state my dependency. And the DSC system, the local configuration manager specifically, deals with these dependencies, makes sure that all the dependencies are met, and then calls me at the right time. If a reboot's needed, it handles the reboot.
Right.
Anything that's needed essentially on the way to get to my state, it takes care of. What we found really interesting about this approach, I will say, is that it becomes almost an iterative path to getting the system in the right state.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes something will not work quite right. The first time we run through the whole thing again, every time you run a desired state configuration, it runs it from scratch because it doesn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You've already got that test in there.
Right.
If it returns, hey, I'm already there, we move on. And so we just blizzard all the way through all those tests, and then we run only the sets you need.
So how do you centrally store this information? You know, you have hundreds of servers in the enterprise.
Right.
How do you ensure that that one consistent desired state is centrally located, accessed, and managed?
So there are a couple of models. First of all, since it's a very declarative way of writing PowerShell, you can check it in your source code,
okay,
as a source depot, and take it out whenever you want. That's one way, and then says, oh, I want to apply it on all systems. The other option is to use the notion of a pull server to say, all these machines are going to talk to a central location, and central location will say, oh, the node is coming, I need to give it a configuration. That configuration document reaches the node and gets enacted. So that way you can have all the nodes talk to the central place, you update the central place once or as often you require, and the machine periodically goes and downloads and reach their desired state.
In fact, when we actually we integrate right now with Azure via an Azure extension handler.
Right.
And you can say, I want a desired state configuration for my extension handler, and here's the one I want my machines to be. You can subset your machines or not as you wish, of course. Mm-hmm. What's cool is as the VM gets created, it goes out to the blob storage and sucks down the right configuration for itself, and then it makes it so. And so the machine actually comes up in the right state for you. Similarly, for a pull server, we created a notion of almost, quote, a safe harbor. How would we get these systems in?
Right.
Again, we just have an HTTPS connection to a pull server. When this machine first boots up, everything except that pull server is shut down. I go there, and it tells me how to set myself up from scratch. So it's a very powerful technology to broadly distribute configurations and to get things right from the get-go.
Now, this polling server, is this some specific server role, or is this just like a Windows file server that everyone has access to?
And that's a great question. So pull server is a Windows feature that you can turn on. We have two variety of pull server. One is a web-based, so you can use HTTP and HTTPS to download that information, and the other is the file-based one. So you can say, oh, I will use a file share as my pull model or pull server, and then from the file share, we can get that configuration document, or you can put it in the known location on that pull server and download it over HTTP.
Great, that makes a lot of sense. Now, stepping back here, I've heard there's really two types of data that you guys take a look at. You have environment data and you have configuration data. Can you just kind of explain what's the difference between these two when we use each?
Yes, and that's a good thing. And I would actually explain and show at the same time.
Oh, even better. Let's take
a
look.
So you know how it looks. So on the screen, you'll see there is a configuration. This configuration says on a node, and I have given the name called Web Server 1, make sure Windows Feature IIS and ASP.NET are installed. So this is the structure. If I want tens of web servers, these two features will not change. Obviously, I'm assuming I have ASP.NET dependencies. So that's the structure, and you will not change here. Here I have things hard-coded, but there's another file which essentially captures your environmental data, things that are going to change. So here, if you see on line 15, I say I have a node called Web Server 1, and it is in a web role, and I've commented out another one, which is Web Server 2. So if I need 20, I can have 20 entries here. In my dev environment, I might have one or two because I'm testing things. In test, you can do 4, 5, 10. But when you go in production, you have hundreds of this. So you change this file to say, here's my environmental data. As my environment changes, I will go and change it. And how do you consume it? You consume it when you write your configuration. You have the same configuration, things like IIS, ASP.NET, they don't change, but website information, that changes, and that becomes a variable, and this variable value comes from that file. So that allows you to, and as Kent mentioned, the notion of depends on, now you can say, oh, don't do this action till the dependency is satisfied. I can actually show a couple of things about DSC. So here is a web server already called Web Server 1.4thCoffee. It is vanilla web server, so this is the default website.
Yep.
And if I want to apply a configuration to it, I can say, assert a website, here's the configuration file, apply it. That configuration, once it starts, it has install IIS and ASP.NET. Since those things are already installed, it'll just check. That is where Kenneth mentioned get, set, and test. And things which are not installed, it'll go and fix them. So I ran it, it tells you in 8 seconds it finished it, and now that same website now has actual content that I want to show it to my end users.
Very nice.
And if he reruns it again.
Yes, and I can show that.
It'll do exactly the same thing, you'll have exactly the same result, which is really important because one of the settings is say, hey, I want to rerun this configuration every 30 minutes, which prevents this whole notion of configuration drift, right? People too frequently, they set up these systems and then they change.
Yep.
Right?
So with that model of avoiding configuration drift, you know, regularly check in every hour, every day, however frequently you need, where does that get executed from? Who's running that? Is that up to the admin? Is that some other task that you would trigger daily or at your need?
That's actually set inside the local configuration manager itself. So it's a meta config. You have the ability to configure the systems and, of course, to configure us.
Okay.
To configure the engine itself. And you simply tell the engine, on a per node basis, hey, I want you to run every 30 minutes, I want you to run every hour, I want you to run every day, depending upon what you want, and we'll rerun it. okay. on exactly that same time frame and reassure, back to your original question on compliance, right, that in fact your system's in compliance, that it does, that it is in the state you want it to be in, and if not, we'll report the errors and tell you about it.
Right. No, so
yeah, so just another show thing where essentially is if you think this is a website, somebody is playing with the thing and they delete the images. Mm-hmm. So what will happen, and I'll just simulate that. What will happen under the covers is images dash recurs dash force. What will happen under the covers is it deletes the files. Your websites are there, but mm-hmm. you don't know what you're paying for $6. You want to know
those
that.
Those are expensive cupcakes, by
yes.
the way.
They are expensive ones.
They're high quality.
High quality.
And what happens is every 30 minutes or so, whatever you want to configure, we have a defaults, but mm-hmm. admins can change them. The same thing will get run again, and I'll just simulate that. And it'll go and says, oh, check. All the pieces are in the right state or not. If they are not, it goes and execute whatever is out of sync, and your website
voila.
Are back.
Cupcakes are back.
Exactly. Right.
So what would you say is the best practice for people considering DSC as far as, is this a good task? Is this a good candidate for me to do this?
And that's a great question because it comes a lot of times. And essentially, as we said in the beginning, desired state configuration is about the end state of the machine or systems you want to be.
Okay.
So anytime you are thinking of configuring a machine for its end state, which are not changing, DSC is a good use case or to use there. But if you are taking some actions, like you're saying, oh, I want to find all the logs that my IIS is creating, zip them up and upload somewhere. That's not the desired state of the machine. That's, you're taking an action. You're saying, oh, things are going to change on a regular basis. I have to upload. That's an action. Desired state is I want a machine to be web server. I want a machine to be domain controller. I want my SharePoint system to be set up correctly, which includes Active Directory, SQL, and web server front ends and back ends. So something like this where you want a system to run perfectly over a long period of time and want to make changes in a very known and precise way, DSC is the right candidate.
And you gave some good examples there, you know, checking for configuration drift, ensuring certain features and roles are installed. Can it do things such as manage registry settings?
Yes.
Totally.
Exactly. And that's where the first set of 12 resources that we shipped in box allows you to manage registry, file system, local users, local groups. And as we started creating more and more resources, that has been expanding to now going and taking care of setting up clusters, setting up SharePoint, setting
firewalls. Totally.
Can you do things such as ensuring certain services are there, that they're running, or that they're in specific states?
Yes.
Totally. In fact, that was part of the first 12 we originally set. And the answer to all those type of questions comes down to, is there a DSC resource for it?
Okay.
Right?
And if there is,
if there
we
is,
can do it. Right?
We can do it.
All right, well, I got a couple more here on the list.
We can't. And what's been great, though, I will say this, is we shipped as a res kit because we've been talking about this velocity thing.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be able to make the world a much simpler place with DSC, and we think we do. But we also want to increase the velocity which people can adopt change and adopt new technology and get their products out there themselves. And so because of that, we started to ship a DSC resource kit, as we call it, right? And it's just a bunch of DSC resources, which are themselves PowerShell modules.
Mm-hmm.
Right out there, and people can download it today. We shipped originally 12, and then we add 10, 15, every couple of months.
Right.
We're up to 80 something now, actually. Many of these, and this is key, many of these are created by people not on our team. In fact, we got about 40 in the pipeline right now, created by people from Exchange, people from SharePoint, other people's right. resources that we're beginning to start, looking at and letting them put out for people, other people to use. And so my point being there is if there's a resource that you want to manage that doesn't have one, go create one.
You can do it yourself.
You can
right?
do it. If you have a PowerShell command, it makes it really easy. If you don't have one, then you have a larger bootstrap problem.
A little bit of work around that.
But files, registry, all that stuff for sure. In fact, his little demo there definitely used files and directories.
Okay. And we'll include a link at the bottom of this video for the resource kit as well if you want to go try that yourself. Now, how about managing user roles, user account, and access to say only these people can access particular servers or clusters, things like that? Is that a scenario we can support?
Yes. So, and essentially, there's no limit because you can do a lot of things today using PowerShell. If not with PowerShell, you can do through WMI or EXE. And you just have to wrap them in the known get, set, and test methods in your modules to do DSC resource. So we have the notion of built-in local users and local groups. So you can create groups. And then as people have created, there is a notion of creating PowerShell remoting endpoints mm-hmm. and hackling them with a perfect specific way to say only Kenneth can come and do this task. And that has also been modeled as a resource in DSC. It's available in PowerShell as remote commandlets. And we have layered those with DSC resources.
And those actually also ship. It's called the GIA toolkit. We call it the Just Enough Administration Toolkit. Jeffrey Stover has been working on that kind of in the background with combination PowerShell, PowerShell DSC. And then we also have, I think we have some resources to manage Active Directory users, don't we?
Yes, we have Active Directory in terms of creating a domain controller, AD users, promote a machine to domain controller or create a domain. We have things for SharePoint, SQL, and some more in pipeline that people will see shortly.
Nice. Now, my final scenario here, can you go and manage third-party software? So for example, if I want to enforce everybody in my company is using the latest version of Acrobat Reader, for example, can I go scan the environment, figure out who's not compliant, force this new third-party software to be pushed up?
Yes, and essentially, you don't have to go and scan the environment. You will say, on every set of machines, whatever criteria you use, I want to make sure Acrobat Reader is installed.
You'd have to make sure DSC is on those machines.
Okay.
And then you write your configuration to express your intent, I want Acrobat Reader to be installed. Here's the EXE name that you want to check if it's not there, and here's the path if it's not there, where to download it from and apply to the system.
And that's the package resource.
And that's the package resource which handles MSI-based installers. And then we are working on Windows Update Resource, which essentially allows you to say, I want to make sure this update packages are installed on my set of machines. So then you push it, and the machine will run and check. If somebody has it installed and they uninstall it, because your intent was it should always be present, it can go and install it back for you.
Awesome.
You are allowed, I must caveat this, you are allowed to run LCM or DSC in a state whereby we don't enforce it after the fact.
Okay.
Some people will ask us about that. Yeah, but I only want you to apply it once or I always want to tell you when to apply it. You can do that too. You're free to do that. I'll make another point though on this whole question about what we can manage, what we mm-hmm. can't, because we talked about Linux and others. We're also working with other vendors, and Chef recently actually announced the ability to layer over these desired state configuration resources. So you can actually leverage something like a Chef server to actually manage resources you want also, because PowerShell DSC is both a language concept, right? Which is what we've shown how you actually declare it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's also the set of resources and this local configuration manager that makes it real underneath. And we have an API and a capability to actually call between those layers. So other people can leverage them to their heart's content, or you can just use PowerShell to create the configuration and we'll do it for you.
This is really great seeing you guys kind of embrace Microsoft's movement towards this openness, right. The extensibility and interoperability. I definitely see you guys leveraging that, yeah.
And two more things is, one thing we have been talking about is compliance and enforcing things in the right state.
Mm-hmm.
There is a process of saying, I want to install or make updates to the system. Which is you have changed your intent. Your intent has changed as your system evolved. And DSC allows you to not just deploy or fix the drift, it even allows you to update your configuration on the system. And the other point is about resources where you can. And here are a couple of links, which is about PowerShell team blog you can find. There is PowerShell.org DSC hub. And here's the link for that. And as well as we have Michael Green, who's one of the big advocates of DSC. He has a blog on private cloud where he keeps all the resources and links about various places you can download.
Awesome. Well, thank you both for coming and giving us a preview of DFC. It looks like a great technology. I'm going to start using it a little more myself.
Great.
And hopefully a lot more of our users out there will be taking advantage of it too. Well, thanks again for coming on the show, guys.
Thank you, Simon.
It's a pleasure.
Welcome back. Well, I hope you learned a lot about desired state configuration and how that can enhance your data center. Now, we'll be back next week?
No. If you didn't catch that in the news, at the very end of the news, next week we aren't going to have an Edge Show episode, but we are going to, you know, there is Azure Conf next week so you can tune into on Channel 9, and then the following week we'll be streaming live at Tech Ed Europe in Barcelona, and many of us on the team will be doing interviews there live. You'll be able to ask questions live. So make sure you tune in to Channel 9 at that time.
Absolutely. And in the meantime, if you have any questions or comments, add them to the bottom of the page or tweet us at TNEdge. We'll see you soon.